Well, we have an election coming up, in case you haven't noticed, and it's a very important election for President of the United States and for control of the House and the Senate. And we're hearing all the polls, and it's supposedly neck and neck in one poll, or Trump's way ahead, or Kamala's way ahead in another. Well, the polls may not matter, and the actual and what we think of as voting in America may not matter, because the game has changed, and we've all know about the wide open border that we've had during the entire Biden Kamala Harris administration. And the estimates now, they're up to, you know, we maybe have 20 million illegals in America. I think that's low. I've heard numbers as high as 40 million. And so we need to talk about what that means for the election and what we can do about it. And one estimate, but according to Just Facts, is that we may have 2 to 5 million illegally registered voters. So let's figure out what to do about that. And now is the time, just too much shy of the election, to talk about it. I've got an old friend back on, Cleta Mitchell, senior legal fellow, I believe, still at the Conservative Partnership mm-hmm. Institute. She's essentially the leading election integrity expert in America. And she's the go-to person. She testifies in front of the House and Senate all the time. And she has depth of knowledge that I want to tap in today. And then, of course, we have Jim Agresti, longtime visitor to this show, who runs and founded Just Facts. And he authored a very interesting survey recently about illegal immigration problem. And so that's where we're going to start. So, Jim, let's kick off with you. In a nutshell, what's been happening?
So, illegal voting by non-citizens is a crime in all 50 states, just like being here illegally is a crime. But it's a crime that is rarely enforced on both fronts. So in order to understand how prevalent it is, you can't use traditional measures like counting prosecutions. That would be as silly as saying, oh, we're going to figure out how many people in the United States are smoking marijuana by how many prosecutions there are. You have to look at it much more scientifically and more objectively. So the way we did that is we used data from a Harvard YouGov survey, which was weighted to be representative of non-citizens. And we cross-referenced that with voter databases using data from an academic. And we found that approximately 10 to 27% of all non-citizens in this country are registered to vote. Now, to give you a feel for the scale of that, and we're using a lowball estimate for the number of them here, that means approximately 2 to 5 million non-citizens will vote in the upcoming presidential election. Mm-hmm. That is more than enough to swing congressional seats, mm-hmm. Senate races, and yes, the Electoral College.
Cleta?
Well, the thing that people will ask me that is, well, how do they get registered? Isn't there aren't there barriers? Isn't there some requirement for proof of citizenship to register to vote? And the answer to that is there should be, but there isn't. In 2013, the United States Supreme Court ruled that the National Voter Registration Act, which was Bill Clinton's top priority, first bill in the Congress that after Bill Clinton was elected president, the NVRA, which we all know as a motor voter, it's a federal law that requires states to register people to vote when they come into contact with the driver's license agencies or social services agencies. And so people getting driver's licenses are given this form. It's the federal voter registration form. And it says, are you a U.S. citizen? Check the box, yes or no. But when Arizona went back, they've been trying to get documentary proof of citizenship for more than 20 years. And they asked the Election Assistance Commission, which was established, it's a federal agency, would you please add to the Arizona form the requirement that we have passed in our legislature, it's a state law, that you have to provide proof of citizenship in order to register to vote in Arizona. That went to the Supreme Court 11 years ago. The court said, no, only Congress can decide what goes on that form. So we now have a situation where states are not allowed to ask for documentary proof of citizenship. And the only two ways that the federal law requires verification of anyone who's registering to vote is to verify their identity and their residency. What's missing from that list? Citizenship. Because 22 years ago, no one could have imagined a situation where we have open borders and the immigration laws are not being enforced. So what we have now is a system whereby verification of identity and residency is accomplished by two steps, a driver's license or a social security number. Well, guess what? Every state issues a driver's license to non-citizens, and 19 states in the District of Columbia issue driver's licenses to illegals. Social security numbers are issued to non-citizens. And increasingly, under this administration, under the Biden-Harris administration, we're seeing that categories that are allowed of illegals that are allowed to get Social Security numbers have increased exponentially. So the two things that are supposed to verify identity and residency do not even approach verifying citizenship. So we have a very porous registration system, and we have all these illegals pouring into the country, being shepherded all over the country by left-wing advocacy groups who are getting paid billions of our tax dollars to get these people benefits, housing, and what else? IDs, driver's licenses. So the problem we have is we have a very porous voter registration system, and once they're on the rolls, it's virtually impossible to figure out who they are and to keep them from voting. That is the threat.
Well, and the process is pretty much controlled by the Democrats, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, this is their bread and butter.
Yes. Yes, it's their bread and butter, and they've been doing this for many years. And one of the things that the Democrats are doing is they make it virtually impossible to remove anyone from the voter rolls once they're on the rolls. Now, the law basically envisions that when you're first enrolled as a voter, registered as a voter, that's a valid registration. And what we know is that's not always the case. And the Democrats fight mightily against it. And their left-wing advocacy groups, their massive litigation network on voting issues, they sue states and counties and threaten states and counties to file suit against them if they remove anybody from the voter rolls. So they really want dirty voter rolls. They want, and they have achieved in some states like Nevada, a statute whereby they send a ballot, not an application, but a ballot to everyone on the voter rolls. And we know that there are tens of thousands of ineligible voters on the voter registration rolls in Nevada who are going to get a ballot if we don't stop them.
Well, the naive question, the naive person would say, well, gee, so they're eligible to vote, but, you know, they could vote either way. That hasn't happened. Jim, you've done a lot of research on how these people are likely to vote.
Yeah, I would argue, believe it or not, that the system is even more porous than Cleta outlined here, and I'll tell you why. If you look closely at that federal voter identification form, you'll see if you don't have a driver's license number or social security number, notice I said number, not actually a card or proof of it, just a number, you can submit a utility bill or a bank statement. If you look at states like New Jersey, I'm a refugee from New Jersey, so I looked at the voter registration form there. It says things like a club membership, a student ID, a rent receipt are all legitimate for getting you registered to vote. And then on top of that, there's a whole nother level of openings for people to vote. And that's this. Illegal fake IDs are rampant in the illegal immigrant community. Cleta mentioned that 2013 Supreme Court ruling. That same year, the chief actuary of the Social Security Administration did a study of illegal immigrants in the system and estimated 700,000 of them are in the Social Security system because they submitted a fake birth certificate. They're completely in the system and integrated in society right that now. That's 700,000 and another 1.8 million work by using other people's social security numbers. They just stole them. They have a fake ID, fake card with somebody else's number on it, and that allows them to work in this country. Then, on top of that, you had in 2017, Trump issue an executive order about using fake ID to register to vote and obtain other benefits in the United States, which, by the way, is against the law. He was just saying this law is going to be enforced under me. And the head of the California State Senate, a fellow by the name of Kevin Leon, DeLeon, gave a speech on the floor saying, this is outrageous. Under this executive order, half my family would be deported. And anyone who knows anyone who's undocumented knows that entirely everyone has secured some sort of fake ID, a fake driver's license, a fake green card, a fake social security card, you name it. All of these things, even if we had checks in place, which we don't, provide broad openings for non-citizens to vote.
So a couple of questions. One, how much of what you just described is a crime and or a felony? I mean, I would think faking your birth certificate would be a crime everywhere and anywhere, but yet that's not enforced, as I understand it. And so we've got people who not only came into the country illegally, which is a crime, but they're committing crime after crime after crime to get all this documentation and all these other things you're talking about. Is that about the way to think about it?
Those, what you're describing, Bill, it is a federal crime, a felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison. So I have to laugh when Democrats start saying no one's above the law, particularly when it comes to their prosecutors going after Donald Trump, but yet they have made millions upon millions of people above the law in this nation by refusing to enforce the law, i.e. prosecutorial discretion, against these non-citizens who are coming here illegally, using fake ID, voting illegally, obtaining welfare illegally.
And well, they're all right, prone, they're all prone to vote Democrat. Go ahead, Cleta.
Well, it's against the, it's a federal crime to impersonate, to hold yourself out as a U.S. citizen if you're not one. And that is a barrier to being eligible for naturalization. It's a deportable offense. In addition to what Jim was saying about 5 years in prison, it's deportable. But again, you're exactly right. There has been no enforcement. There's been no effort. There's been no public education campaign. There's been no effort by the Democrats. And here's why. Let's just look at the Democrats' voting records in this Congress. Over the years, historically, there was a question on the United States decennial census for 140 years that said, are you a U.S. citizen? Some form or fashion, some question like that. Then Congress passed a law called the Alien Registration Act. And that bill, that law, required registering all aliens, everyone who's not a citizen. So it created this registry. So the Census Bureau decided that they didn't need this to ask the question, are you a citizen? Because over here they had this Alien Registration Act. What happened was that Congress ended up repealing the Alien Registration Act. So there's no registry of non-citizens. But the Census Bureau did not put the question back on the census. And when when President Trump tried to put it back on for the 2020 census, the left lost their collective minds, filed suit in the U.S. Supreme Court. And ultimately, even though on the merits, the Trump administration won, but it was remanded for Administrative Procedures Act violations.
The Census Bureau was not allowed to ask people if they were citizens.
That's right. And so now then there was a bill in Congress this year to require that the Census Bureau reinstate the citizenship question. Every Democrat voted no. There was a bill that required apportionment of House seats among the states to be based on citizen population, not just inhabitants and total population. Every Democrat in the House and Senate opposed that bill, voted no. Why? because it is estimated that after the 2010 census, California would have lost four House seats had it not had the population been had the citizenship been apportioned or apportionment based on citizenship instead of population. After the 2020 census, studies have shown that California would have lost three House seats had had the Congress been apportioned by citizenship instead of population. Well, that's seven House seats in the U.S. House, but guess what else it is? It's seven electoral votes for the Democrats. So the Democrats voted no on the citizenship question. They have voted no on the bill to require apportionment to be based on citizenship. And every House member voted no to overturn the District of Columbia's new law, because Congress has the authority to oversee the laws of the District of Columbia. Every House member voted no when to overturn the law that the D.C. Democrats adopted, which is to allow non-citizens to vote in D.C. elections. That means that if you're an employee of the communist Chinese embassy in Washington, you can vote, supposedly only in D.C. elections. But trust me, having lived in the District of Columbia for more than 20 years, they can't manage one voter list, much less be able to discern whether you're a citizen or non-citizen and which ballot you're supposed to get.
Well, I don't think Trump's going to carry D.C. But the general point is exactly right.
The pattern is that Democrats are basing their political future on non-citizens. That is part of their national global plan for their political power. And why? If you cannot sell your policies and your proposals for the country to turn America into a Marxist, one-world country, destroy our sovereignty, well, what do? If you can't persuade a majority of the electorate, you just change the electorate. That's what this is about. It is by design. It is not an accident.
Well, we've been shouted down when we talk about the great replacement theory, but listening to this and everything else, it's a fact. I mean, this is the strategy. It's the great replacement scheme. And Jim, this is not, you've done some analytical work on how these people vote. It's not just conjecture that they vote in large percentage for Democrats. What have you done? Talk about your research.
So it's not my research. It's research from another scholar, an Old Dominion University professor.
You're allowed to borrow. Great artists steal, you know.
Yeah. So anyway, he's found, looking at several elections at this Harvard YouGov survey, that approximately 72% to 83% of all non-citizens vote for Democrats in presidential elections. So that is a massive swing. That is a large, you know, this isn't a 50-50 thing where, hey, they help one party and they hurt the other. What's interesting in all this is you hear Democrats saying, well, we can't have this verification. It might suppress the vote. You know, somebody doesn't have a birth certificate or proper ID. Forget the merits of that for a moment, because I think we all know how silly that is. But the point is this: every non-citizen who votes illegally cancels out the vote of a citizen, period. So that is the greatest form of voter suppression in our country. They are suppressing citizens' constitutional right to vote.
It's absolutely true. And it's deliberate. That's the part that we have to realize and that people must focus on. It is deliberate. A vote for these people, these Democrats running for president, Congress, state, legislatures. I mean, Vermont is a state completely controlled by Democrats. They've adopted as a state policy and law that non-citizens can vote in Vermont. So this is not, there is a pattern here. And these local communities controlled by Democrats all over the country that are adopting these ordinances and procedures to allow non-citizens to vote, which is why there is an effort, a national movement, to have states adopt constitutional provisions that say in this state, only citizens of the United States can vote in any election. There were 8 states that have already approved that amendment. There are 8 states this fall will have that on the ballot. And it passes by 80 to 89% in every state. And it will try to, it will keep some of these Democrat-controlled localities from adopting these non-citizenship voting provisions. But this is a real plan.
How much of the fight is at the state level and how much is at the federal level? I mean, what do we, how do we get back at this?
Well, I think that we have to, and I've been doing a lot with, we have an Only Citizens Vote Coalition. People are interested. They can go to the website of www.onlycitizensvotecoalition.com. And we have a lot of resources for people to be able to download and use with their local officials, with their state officials. We have model legislation. We have model policy. We've got the model Only Citizens Voting Amendment, letters that people can send to the editor, letters to the editor and resources. We just have to start making a lot of noise about this, because if we as citizens don't fight back, we're going to lose our country to this massive influx of illegals. And as I say, they're a vulnerable population. They're controlled by, they're able to be manipulated by these leftist advocacy groups. And we need to be worried about the law breaking, about the living under the, and these illegal, as Jim was pointing out, all the illegal papers that they have. But the worst and the biggest threat is that to our national sovereignty by having illegals allowed to vote.
Jim?
You know, there was a survey done by Pew Research about 10 years ago, and they interviewed immigrant Latinos, and they asked this simple question: would you like a government to be larger and provide more services, or smaller and less invasive? And I believe the figure was about 85% of them said larger and more services, which makes sense. A lot of these people are low-income people. They're poorly educated, so they're looking for help. Okay, now, but when you compare that to the U.S., general U.S. population, it's 40%. So this is a natural constituency for the Democratic Party. People say, oh, these people have no motive to vote. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. You have a party that is telling them, we will let you stay here. We will provide you and your family welfare. And ultimately, we will make you citizens. That's in the Democratic Party platform.
So what's the profile of these people? I mean, Donald gets on and talks about criminals and murderers and members of the Chinese Communist Party, and he's certainly right about a lot of the people coming across the border now. But generally speaking, what's the education level, the literacy level, the talent level of people coming in? And the sense of this question is, I get into it a little bit with my venture capital friends and say, well, we need immigration to keep our talent pool up, and people are running companies need people for these jobs. But it seems to me like the people coming in are sort of the least desirable people. Didn't Venezuela open its prisons to send people across our border?
Well, that's debatable. That's a question right now. I know Trump is saying that. I haven't seen hard proof of it.
We want to fact check him.
Yeah, what are you going to say, Bill?
We can fact check him. You're the guy.
Exactly. So, but what we do have hard proof of is the education level of illegal immigrants is extremely low. Approximately 40% of them don't even have a high school diploma. And I'm talking about adults, not kids. Okay? Now, there's a reason for that, because we have an immigration system in this country that basically, the laws, without getting too wonky about it, they ensure that people immigrate here who are going to contribute more than they take. And these people can't get in under those laws. In fact, the illegal border crossers can't even get a travel visa and then overstay that visa, right? They're not even eligible for that because they are a known threat to the prosperity or safety and health of this country. So Biden is welcoming them by the millions. And yes, these people, again, they are people who are going to vote for Democrats, who are going to use a lot of social services. It doesn't necessarily mean they're bad people. I mean, a lot of them are hardworking, and they are polite and they're kind. But amidst their ranks, when you start letting in people who are not vetted, you're going to get an extraordinary amount of criminals. And contrary to what the left and the so-called fact checkers will tell you, the serious crime rates, I'm talking serious crimes, things like DUIs, assaults, murders, are far, far higher among illegal immigrants than the general U.S. population. And the left cites all these studies. We've got each of them debunked on our website at justfacts.com. But what they do is they use some really, I don't know what you, other to call it, than dishonest methodologies to arrive at these conclusions. Number one, they mess with the denominators. They use extremely high denominators to make the rates look smaller. Number two, they fail to account for the fact that most criminals are repeat offenders. So what happens is with non-citizens, if you get convicted of a crime, put in jail, when you're done, you're generally deported. And so they don't look at what happens with that, because imagine what would happen in the United States if every criminal we had in this country got kicked out of the country when their sentence was done. The crime rate would plummet. So you can't look at the crime rates of non-citizens who remain in the country, but those who enter the country. And there's three other little sneaky things they do to basically cook the books and turn the fact that these people have an inordinate amount of serious criminals among them into the exact opposite of reality. To say, oh, they're extremely law-abiding. Nothing could be further from the truth.
So you're describing a dystopian nightmare. And if we don't end up turning this around or stopping it, we don't have a country. A lot of people are feeling that way already. Now, let's hope and dream that Trump wins the presidency and the Republicans control the Senate and Republicans retain control of the House. What could we do? Let's give people a reason to get out and vote to make that happen. What could we do to stem the tide?
Well, I will tell you that for purposes of strengthening our election laws, we need to do what the Democrats always do. When they take control, H.R. 1, it's a little known fact that the Speaker of the House, whoever the party of the Speaker is, Speaker has the first 10 bills.
H.R. 1 is the first bill that comes out.
Okay. That it gets to pick. And those first 10 bills are the Speaker's priorities for that Congress. H.R. 1 for the Democrats has been and always is a political process bill. H.R. 1 in 1993 was the National Voter Registration Act. When Nancy Pelosi became Speaker again in 2007, it was a lobbying registration reporting law. When Nancy Pelosi became Speaker in 2019, H.R. 1 was a federalization of our election laws. It's everything the election integrity advocates oppose. So if we win control, if by some miracle, President Trump wins, the Republicans control the House and Senate, I am begging the Republicans that H.R. 1 should be a bill that fixes the National Voter Registration Act, gets rid of the prohibition on requiring documentary proof of citizenship, gets rid of the barriers to cleaning voter rolls, makes certain that that voting by mail in federal elections is restricted and not unlimited, simply because, for one thing, the post office cannot handle it. And that's pretty clear. There are a number of things that could be done to make our elections stronger and return some systematic integrity. I hope that the Republicans, that would be what H.R. 1 should be in the next Congress. And really important to me.
You described something that you've been talking about forever, and I'm utterly convinced that you're right. As the Republicans, we spend our time quibbling about this policy or that ideal, or, you know, are we sticking to the Constitution? Democrats focus on one thing, the levers of power.
That's
process,
right.
Process,
right.
Process. And
right.
Process is boring. And it's, you know, I mean,
not to me.
Oh, I know, not to you, but you're built. You have a bigger brain than most of us.
I cut my political teeth as a Democrat.
Okay, well, there we go.
I served 8 years in the legislature in Oklahoma as a Democrat. I know how Democrats think. And it has just been shocking to me to realize, first, I left the Democratic Party. I was an independent for many, many years, and only have been registered as a Republican the last 10 years. But honestly, it's just that Democrats and Republicans have completely different worldviews on this. And there are just so few on the conservative side who realize that it's just like a lawyer in law school. The most important classes that you have in law school are not necessarily the substantive law classes. That just teaches you to do issue spotting. The most important classes are your procedural classes. What is the criminal procedure? What is the civil procedure? There are four courses on civil and criminal procedure in law schools. And that's because you can have the best lawsuit in the world, but if you don't get the procedure right, who to file, what standing, all of those technical grounds, you can't ever get your day in court. That's what Democrats understand about election laws, campaign finance laws. Political process controls the outcome of the policy discussion. And the left has devoted billions of dollars over the last 20 years to change our political process.
That's the question I wanted you to dig into a little bit more. Portray how much different the emphasis is in dollars and number of lawyers and number of operatives that the Democrats have in the field. And they don't think of this as something that surrounds a particular election day. They think of this as something they do 365 days every year, 24 hours in every day. It's a full-time job for them to do this. But what are some of the numbers that jump out that describe this?
Well, the Capital Research Center has something called Influence Watch, and they started tracking this about 5-6 years ago.
That's on their website?
It's on their website, influencewatch.org or capitalresearchcenter.org. And they have done deep dives into researching what they call the left's massive voting machine, and it is enormous. Pierre Omidyar is one of their chief funders. He is an eBay billionaire, and he started something, I want to say in 2011, 2012, called the Democracy Fund. It is like a venture capital fund, except that it gives money. He put $250 million into it to start and has invested more than that since. And it was to start all of these left-wing advocacy groups in the election space. And the Capital Research Center has estimated that since about 2012, the left, and that includes left-wing billionaires, left-wing foundations, that together, that they have invested between $11 and $14 billion into the election space. And that goes to everything but changing the way the laws, how we vote. I mean, we can all remember, I think we're all old enough to remember Election Day. We don't have Election Day anymore. We have election season. Ballots are going out in states like North Carolina as we speak. Virginia has, 45 days of early voting? And when you have people voting by mail, let's just go through all the laws over the last 100 years that were put in place to protect the secret ballot, for people to be able to cast a ballot without undue political influence. That's why you can't campaign within so many feet of the polls. You have this little booth so you can make sure you mark your vote in private. Well, when you have voting by mail, all those protections go out the window. Democrats don't want those protections. They want to be able. They don't view people as individuals making a decision. They view these as collectives of votes. So every single aspect of our voting system has been studied and upended by one or more of these leftist groups. And for every single issue or component of the voting process, you have dozens, dozens of left-wing groups that just focus on that. It's pretty shocking. And I'm surprised we are able to win anything. And sometimes I just want to pull the covers over my head. But then I remember that if we can just stop them this time, that's why when President Trump says this is the most important election, I think it is. Because if we can't stop them this time, and if they are able to continue to manipulate the process, They will fix it where we can't ever win again. We're almost there. And I think this is our last best hope to be able to stop them and then to start reversing some of these provisions in law.
Jim, you want to jump in on that?
Sure. So everything Cleve is saying, it's quite frankly staggering. You know, it's just, our depth of knowledge on this is amazing. I'm being blown away by what she's saying. But I want to add on top of that, you have a political machine built into the media and into big tech, particularly with Google, who several years ago instituted a process called, or an algorithm change called, your money or your life. And according to the internal Google documents, which I have, which they posted and then took down, but I saved a copy of and reposted, they basically decided if an issue impacts your money or your life, i.e. anything in the world of public policy, we are going to select the sources we deem to be most credible, because this is important. These are issues that can really impact you. And what you find now is, in that, since that process started, I think it was 2013 or 2014, the Google algorithm has been completely retooled to emphasize sources on the left. And this is where people go when they're looking for information in this day and age. They might see this video and say, well, let me check out to see if what Jim and Cleta are saying is true. And they're going to end up with a bunch of left-wing nonsense.
Where are we going to find that?
Where you can find what? The Google thing?
Yeah, where do you have that posted?
Just Facts has an initiative called Just Facts Academy, justfactsacademy.org.
Okay.
And we have a video there and documentation for it on search, how to use search engines properly. It's part of our research series.
Yeah. Well, the thing, you know Robert Epstein.
Yes.
And he's done all the work on Google, and he believes that they're already influencing, you know, 5-10% of the vote every time. We all, you know, the story about the, you click on something and page, the first things you see are all the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN,
Wikipedia,
et cetera, Wikipedia. And you got to go to page 8 or 9 to find anybody. And increasingly, you can't even find it on page 8 or 9 to find somebody who agrees with us.
I'll give you an example of that. Do you remember just in June when the RNC published a video that showed all of the Biden files wandering off when he was in Normandy, and all of the, you know, they did, the RNC research department published this video, and the left went berserk, and the media all said the same thing. You know, it's a deep fake video. They're using AI, all the things that they said, but they all said exactly, CBS, ABC, they all said exactly the same words. So I'd heard about it, and I went to Google to see what they had, what they were showing. And I put in this for the search, RNC video Biden. I could not find on any page, on no page, just with the search, that I could not, it did not appear. Not on page 1, not on page 9. It did not appear. The only way I found it was to go to the RNC research Twitter account, and that had the video. That tells you it is deliberate. Dr. Epstein, I asked him about if he could show any particular impact in the Virginia 2023 legislative races. And he came back and said, based on his research, because he now has a way of capturing all of this and retaining it, that he estimates that Google cost the Republicans 7 Senate seats, state Senate seats, in Virginia in 2023.
Yes,
now,
right. That's
pretty shocking. And it tells us, I think Jim has put his finger on it, this big tech influence and suppression of thought and ideas is pretty shocking and very scary.
So swinging back to where we started, how do we estimate the number of votes that are likely to be different in the election coming, or the election, this election season, How will the illegals influence the vote totals?
Well, according to the best, most rigorous, most transparent data I can find, it's going to be approximately 1 to 2.5 million people will vote illegally. I don't know exactly where. I can't pinpoint that. I don't have that kind of precision. Are you going to say something, Bill, or ask something?
Well, I'm just going to ask the question. Does this explain why they're sending these illegal immigrants to certain states? I mean, they know where they need the votes. Like, you wonder why 20,000 Haitians show up in Springfield, Ohio. Well, Ohio's a red state. Maybe they think they can get some of those people voting and move Ohio. Do we think the master plan includes where these people are going into where it would matter for vote totals?
I can't read their minds, but I can tell you this. In certain moments of candor, their agenda becomes very clear. I'm thinking about a speech that Eliseo Medina, who was head of the SEIU, gave to a large group of union members, basically saying, we have to get amnesty. He used the politically correct term, a pathway to citizenship for all of these people, undocumented, to give Democrats a permanent majority. That's straight out of his mouth. I don't need to read his mind. I don't need to hypothesize. He said it.
Well, and I think you look at, let me just give you a snapshot about Wisconsin. The chairman of the state elections, the legislating House Elections Committee, held a hearing in May of 2024. And he brought in the head of the Department of Transportation and the head of the Wisconsin Election Commission and just asked, what information do you have in the Department of Transportation that could assist in determining whether we have non-citizens on the voter rolls in Wisconsin? Well, ultimately, the Department of Transportation acknowledged a couple of things. One, yes, they do have citizenship data. It's not perfect, but every state is basically compliant at this point, or virtually compliant with real ID. Remember, that was a law passed by Congress after 9/11, and its effective date has been pushed back to now. The effective date is May of 2005. That you have to be a citizen of the United States or permanent resident in order to get a real ID. And that is what you have to have in order to enter a federal building, board a commercial airplane, or enter a federal military installation. So states across the country have, over the past 10 to 15 years, been acquiring citizenship data. And so the legislature in Wisconsin asked the Department of Transportation to allow the voter rolls in the possession of the Wisconsin Election Commission to be run against that citizenship database, or to have the Department of Transportation turn it over to the Legislative Audit Bureau. Guess what? It's September. That has not happened. So now there is a lawsuit. Let's pray that that is addressed quickly and that they're able to run that data. It's not, as I say, it's not perfect. But one of the reasons it matters in Wisconsin is because we know Wisconsin is a very close state. We know that the presidential election was decided by approximately 20,000 votes in 2020. And we know that there are very active left-wing groups, Catholic Charities, Lutheran Social Services, who are responsible for many, many thousands of illegals that they're bringing all over the state of Wisconsin. And the Department of Transportation has signs posted everywhere saying, no birth certificate, no documents, no problem. They will give you an ID which looks exactly like, it looks exactly like a driver's license. There's no distinguishing characteristic. And they have same-day voter registration in Wisconsin. So all you have to do is show up with your ID that looks like a driver's license, and you're given a ballot. And we already know one final fact about Wisconsin is that after the 2020 election, there was a study done by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. No Trump supporters, those guys. But it was a good study, and it showed that the law that requires post-election confirmation of identity and residency, I don't know what that good that's supposed to do you, because their ballots have already been counted, but they are supposed to go back and confirm that the people who showed up and registered on Election Day are who they say they are. There were more than 25,000 mismatches, no matches, more than the margin of victory for Biden in Wisconsin in 2020. So that's how granular the left thinks. And I think that that is the biggest threat in Wisconsin.
So we need to get out of here. We've spent a lot of time piling against all odds and all the things we've talked about. Let's see if we can win this election. What can we do between now and then? I mean, one big thing is make sure we get everybody who is philosophically aligned with us to get out and vote. And given this scenario, maybe vote often. But how do we? How do we? What should we be doing right now? I mean, I know there are a lot of things after if we win, when we win, we can do. But what can we do in the next 60 days?
Let me give you two things. Number one, I am very serious. I would love everybody to go to the OnlyCitizensVoteCoalition.com website, download the resources there. Just pick something. Go to your local election board. Go to your local county commissioners. Ask them to pass a resolution. Ask them to run the database of citizenship information that agencies in the county have against the voter rolls. Create activity. Write a letter to the editor. Meet. Get on a local radio talk show. There are things citizens can do. Make noise on this non-citizenship voting issue. And if you are interested in helping, because I am working on raising funds that I in turn give to local groups who are doing things like fighting with secretaries of state to clean up voter rolls, then contact me at Cleta Mitchell, cleta@cletamitchell.com.
What's your website? I'm a contributor there. How do we reach that to contribute money to your effort?
Well, you'll have to contact me because I don't have a website for my Fair Elections Fund for
that's
a reason.
Right.
People can email me if they want to give money. Don't ask me where to volunteer. If you want to volunteer, get involved in the Only Citizens Vote Coalition or sign up to be a poll watcher, a poll worker. And to do that, just go to whoscounting.us. That's whoscounting, just WHOS, whoscounting.us. And if you want to sign up to be involved in the election process, that's where you go. And we'll make sure you get assigned in your state.
Okay, so that sounds like a plan. Let's do it. We've got to get out and make these things happen. I've got a billion other questions. I have to get you back for more, but I think we've got our to-do list here, and we'll get all these sites up on our site so people can find them. And you've also got a very good video of your testimony, about a 3-minute, and other people's testimony detailing some of these other things. We'll make that part of this episode.
Great. Thank you.
And Jim, we're going to be linking your work on this to that as well. So thanks, guys. Jim Agresti, Just Facts, Cleta Mitchell, so many things you've done, all things electoral integrity. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I mean,
you
guys are out fighting the fight gives me a lot of hope.
So, thank you for having us on, Bill.
Thanks for joining.
Much.
Anyway, great this has been the Bill
you.
Walton Show, and stay tuned for more like this in the near future. So thanks for joining, and hope you found this edifying, and send us your comments. And of course, wherever you're looking at this, subscribe.